did. We'll get to that shortly.
Good evening, guys, and welcome to episode 8 of the Golf Days Australia podcast, sponsored by Dint Putters. Spoiler alert, we have a new world number one. We're broadcasting to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, and Anchor, and plenty more. Remember to hit that follow button and give us a 5-star review. It'd be awesome if you could do that. Stacked episode this week. As I said before, spoiler alert, we have a new world number one. We'll be breaking down the Memorial round by round. So many notables missed the cut this week, Nate. Your man Beefcake channels our man Double Par. Has to take his glove off to count his shots. Moving day proved to be exactly that. And we have another huge announcement. Very, very huge. Nate, take it away.
Yeah, another massive one, mate. Obviously, we've got Dint Punters on board, which is awesome. And we can announce that we've got a second sponsor on board now. So this is a big one as well, Cobra Puma. So Puma have come on board as a sponsor. Which is massive. Obviously, just a coincidence that Bryson's also sponsored by them. That, you know, that is just purely a coincidence. But, you know, you've got Ricky, you've got Gary Woodland, you've got Lexi Thompson, Clint Gutherson from the Eels. There's heaps out there. Puma's massive, massive brand. Everyone knows about the Cobra, One Length Club, their drivers, everything else. They make great gear. So, yeah, it's really exciting that we've got them on board, and looking forward to the partnership. You know, they're big on pushing about enjoying the game of golf, and I think that sits really well with what we're about here at Golf Days Australia. So, yeah, exciting news, Cobra Puma, Puma on board, plenty of prizes and comps to come, looking to give away a fair bit of merch in the near future. So stay tuned for that one. Massive news.
Yeah, I can see you sporting the Puma hat there already, getting into the vibe. We've got some merch that's already landed on your doorstep and some merch that's heading our way as well, which is really cool. Thanks again, Cobra Puma, for all the support. I know yourself, Nate, you've been talking with them for a little while, and it's been on the boil, and fantastic that we can now announce that we have our second sponsor in Cobra Puma Golf. Fantastic. Massive.
Yeah, exciting. I actually got to wear their brand new shoes. They sent me some shoes out to trial, so some Ignite Puma shoes. I've always worn another brand of shoes every time I've played golf, and I was a bit hesitant trying a new pair of shoes and a new brand, and these Ignite shoes are just mate, they were great to wear. They were comfy. They've got the disc on the front, so like the BOA system where you just zip it up. Waterproof, they were comfy as. So 18 holes, I tried them on Saturday, felt good. The golf wasn't great, but at least I felt good. So thank you, Puma.
We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But on the sponsor side of things, as mentioned before, Dint Putters came on and we announced that one last week. Now, Amy, I think you've had a bit of a chat with Anthony Dinty from Dint Putters as well, and you've got your golf day coming up. Any updates in that side?
Yes, I have. Yeah, had a chat with him today, and he's very kindly donating a putter for the day. So I'm not sure what capacity we'll be using that in yet, as it's that's a ripper of an item. So could be in the auction. It's going to need a pretty high bid because I'll have a reserve on that if so.
but
we'll have to see. But yeah, so there are still spots for my golf day. Get in and get your tickets. Yeah, just go on to any of my social media. The link will be on there, or just get in touch with me, send me a message or whatever, and I'll help you get booked in. If you can't be there on the day, then still feel free to, get in touch with me and be involved in, you know, any other way you might be able to think. But I'd love to have as many people involved as possible. It's going to really be an awesome day. I can't wait.
And it's on Thursday, July 30. Where is it again, Ames?
It is at the Glades Golf Club on the Gold Coast, beautiful Gold Coast. So if you're local, get down, and if you're not, then why would you not want to get to the Gold Coast and have a game at the Glades? Beautiful.
Yeah, we'd love to be up there. I absolutely know we'd be first to get up there and join in and support you and help out and have fun on the day. I'm sure it's going to be a bit of a ride. You got a few people getting up there as well, so a couple of celebrities I saw too. So, yeah, if you want more information, hit up Amy's social media sites and have a bit of a squiz at the event and get involved and help our girl out.
Amy, how are you doing the auctions for the on the day? The auctions themselves.
Could there be a way that you could throw
some items up on our Facebook to show what's about around so that we could get some online bidding happening?
That's a good shout, actually, because it might be a bit of a silent auction. So therefore, we could have some phone bidding.
Yes.
Yeah, that could be a good shout. I'm gathering up a good collection. So I think people might want to jump on board. So that's a good shout.
We'll throw it up there. Cool.
Absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely. All right. On to some golf. We had a turbulent weekend, is probably one of the words that I would use most appropriately about the weekend's match. Weekend's tournament, sorry. Round one. Nate, give us a bit of a rundown.
Right. What a tournament. They, in the words, they nearly lost control of the golf course because they were chopping it early on and there was chaos. I think I remember the first round as well. Like you've got DJ just hitting it sideways, putting it in all different positions. At one stage, you've got Xander Schauffele practicing how to hit a shot and then jump after the shot because he was on a downhill lie that was going into the bunker, and because he had to hit down on it, he knew that he was then going to end up in the bunker after contact. So you see him swinging and jumping afterwards. I've never seen anyone practice jumping after a shot before, and only at the Memorial could that happen. So round one, what's that?
Maybe Hoysung.
He'd be able to do it, but it was just great to see them struggling. I enjoy watching tough golf. I think everyone does. I mean, it's all good to see minus 26, 27 winning, but you don't want to see it every week. And it was crazy the difference in the course, and you knew that in round one from last week. They played there a week before, and all of a sudden you've got guys that tore it up the week before that are absolutely struggling. So yeah, round one, that sort them out, and we knew we were going to be in for a decent week.
Yeah, I don't know what they fed that rough in the gap between tournaments. It was thick. It was absolutely thick. But you topped it off chopping it very early.
Chopping.
Round two, controversy.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about round two.
Your man, Beefcake. Oh, he's forever going to be your man on this podcast. Don't worry.
And that's fine. This guy,
this
guy just, I think he's embracing being golf's villain. I really think that he's just taking on that role of being the villain of golf and he's just running with it. And I think it's great for golf. Everyone does not like him at the moment. I'm in a very small percentage at the moment. It's fine. He's entertaining. But he's 10. The out of bounds argument that he had with the rules official, the counting his shots on the green with his fingers. I've never seen a more relatable moment with a pro than when he is standing on a green after he's sunk his putt and he's looking back up the fairway and pointing there, and then I went out of bounds, and then I went back, and then I went out of bounds again, and then I was there. It was brilliant. So, even got his caddy blocking the camera at the end of it. So, It's just Bryson being Bryson, and I think we're going to get that each week, and everyone's going to want to see what happens to Bryson, and everyone loved seeing him blow up.
Well, Jack was in the commentary booth. Yeah, he was. Absolutely. I think Jack was in the commentary booth when that was unfolding, and I think they were obviously quite surprised that at his second dig out and put it out of bounds for a second time. And after the ruling, the second opinion ruling, Jack was just saying, he's asking what he's owed. Like, he's owed an explanation as to the ruling, and it just took two officials to tell him that. So I'm not necessarily on the negative side of Bryson. I'm probably on the fence still with him, but I like a lot of what he does, and I don't like a lot of what he does. So, you know,
I kind of wish the second official told him the ball was in, because everyone wanted to know what the hell was he going to do. He was talking about climbing the fence and trying to hit it back from the other side, and it would have been just as entertaining. So, I don't know. Aim, have you been in that spot where you know you shouldn't be playing the certain shot you are, but you kind of just, you whatever takes over and you just try and hit the dumb shot?
Yeah, like all the time. Yeah, I did today, actually. I did that today. I played up at Indro, which obviously wasn't in a tournament. So after I did it, I was like, well, I wouldn't have done that in a tournament. But then I was like, I probably would have. I was like in a hazard and I was like, I can see the ball. And I'm like, I'm not stood in the water. I'll just try and play it. And it was like a horrible lie. Like I was never going to get it out near the green. And I was like, I think I can get it near the front. And then it's like gone about 2 foot in front of me. So I didn't go full Bryson though. It was tough to pick a favorite moment from him this week. I probably was the counting on the fingers, but it was tough to pick a favorite. Like if you're counting on the fence with him, then you're gonna need a ruling, a second opinion ruling maybe.
Pun intended, on the fence.
I know, I like that.
And Paul Casey, on a par three. What happened, Nate?
Yeah, well, he just he had an eight, as you do. You just you go into a par three. He hits it into the green side bunker, behind the green or back left. So he's there for one. Next thing you know, he's had an eight. So Bryson wasn't the only one that was struggling. There was more than a few of those guys out there that were struggling. Paul Casey's eight on a par three after being green side bunker for one. That just shows you what that place can do to you. So we also had J-Day had a great round, back in form, 6 under. He shot that day, 66 equal low with Denny Willett, and he had 2 early bogeys as well, J-Day. So that was really good in round 2 to see that, you know, he was going into the weekend with a bit of form.
Very good. I love seeing J-Day back up in the leaderboard ranks. It's great to see. So then we move into moving day, Saturday, round 3. Tiger said that his back felt much better and cards are 71 to bounce back after his 76 on Friday. Says it's a little bit easier that we don't have fans. I thought that was an interesting comment from him. It's more low-key, so it's similar to playing at home. A very different atmosphere. That's quite obvious. But what wasn't obvious to me that he thought it was a bit easier not having fans. So, I'm not quite sure what to take from that and what he'll need to do to really be there come the stretch on Sunday without having that two-shot advantage with the Tiger effect in play. So I think we talked about it last week and you called it out, Amy, as being something of interest to watch for when he's in tournament condition. And that was an interesting comment from him. Absolutely, moving day lives up to its name well and truly. Finau was absolutely powering along, going 3 under after 11 holes to go to a 12. To go to 12 under and a 3-shot lead, only to then make a double on 12 and temporarily reduce his lead to 1. All the while, Rahm is going on a 4-hole birdie streak and ends the day atop the leaderboard, 4 shots clear of Ryan Palmer and Finau. Big day. Absolutely big day. You had a comment about J-Day again for...
Yeah, so you're talking about Tiger's back and how Tiger's back felt. J-Day at the end of round 3 had an interview, post-round interview, and he mentioned that he said, like, you could see that he was grimacing still, picking up his ball out of the hole, even, you know, grabbing his tee or putting the ball down on the tee. And he said that it's a ticking time bomb and that he's just trying to manage it. So that's pretty worrying as well for, I know how long and how many issues he's had, and to see he's still hitting him, you know, 400 yards, but he's grimacing obviously and struggling through it. And the fact that it's a ticking time bomb, it is worrying to see J-Day like that, because obviously he's still got the form. He's in form. He ended up finishing T4, but just worried about his back with that being the way it is. But Finau blowing up on that round 3 as well. after 16th hole, where there was a bit of controversy on Twitter, and we're going to get to Rahm's one anyways, but he kind of did the same thing where he put his club behind the ball. Ball clearly moved, but didn't move position in total. And there was a lot of people blowing up on Twitter about it, but then he kind of came to his own demise on 17 and 18 and all of a sudden was in big trouble.
Absolutely. On to J-Day again for a sec. And in that same interview, he also threw down the challenge after his even par round, saying that Rahm's lead is still not a secure lead, and commented about the early Sunday starters might have it a bit easier as the wind is forecasted to pick up on Sunday. I don't know if that actually happened in terms of the wind picking up. It didn't look like it. But he absolutely knew that come Sunday that his lead wasn't a formidable opponent to achieve. He called it. Rahm sort of struggled a little bit on the turn, and it actually looked for a short period there that something was going to break and Palmer was just going to break through, but unfortunately that didn't happen for himself either. But maybe let's go straight to Sunday, because there was a lot there to unpack as well. Jumping into Rahm at one stage, yeah, he was leading by 8 shots and then got down to a 3-shot lead, and it definitely looked ominous, as I said, during that early stages of the back nine. Rahm smashing driver left on 11, then smashing it into the tee box. So he's visibly angry, throwing his club, but smashing his driver down on that tee box. And the commentators were like really surprised. I wasn't necessarily as surprised given
he's a Spaniard. He's a crazy Spaniard, yeah, of course.
Exactly.
Raging bull. So it was about time we saw that from him. Everyone knows that he's like that and he's got a bit of fire in his belly. And he was playing so solid and then all of a sudden started to slip up. And yeah, he got a bit angry and it was like, okay, what's going to happen here? And the first front nine was kind of pretty standard. You know, Palmer didn't slip up really till the six, but it didn't make anything kind of happen. And it kind of just looked like everyone was going through the motions. And then the back nine, finally we got some drama.
Yeah, it looked like a bit of a start of a bit of a spiral, at least, even with the 5-shot lead, you know, pulling your driver and yes, then smashing it into the ground. It definitely added to a bit of the drama. It wasn't until the par three 16th that again it looked to be sewn up, both players actually pulling their tee shots left of the pin, with water troubling. Palmer almost not carrying the water, getting a good break and hitting that hill and it holding. Then Rahm pulls and overshoots it to the back of the green. Then it was a really beautiful flop shot that he hit.
He's pretty dead there. You're thinking it's going to be at least a shot back to Palmer there. And if Palmer can throw his in the hole, who knows what it could have been. It could have been 2-shot swing. So you just didn't know what was going to happen. There was no way you were taking Rahm's position over Palmer's.
No, Palmer had a putt. It was in the second cut, but he had a putt out. And he wasn't actually far off holing his either. It didn't lip, but it wouldn't have been far off holing his. But we thought that was going to be the hole that sewed it up for John Rahm. I spotted it. I don't know if you guys spotted it, but I spotted it in the coverage. I thought that something had moved. I thought his ball had moved, but I wasn't quite sure given the camera angle, etc. And I couldn't really comment. I was certainly not going to be able to be not going to be jumping on social media saying, "Hey, PGA Tour, yeah." His ball just moves.
Why not? Don't you have nothing better to do like all the other people on Twitter that just love to whinge about this kind of stuff?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, watching it live, I thought when he grounded his club that the ball moved in the rough. And then when the players were at the 17th green, replays were brought up and it absolutely looked to have moved. It didn't improve his lie. And I don't think it was intentional in any way, shape or form, but nonetheless it moved. It didn't spoil the victory anyway. That was a good thing about it, and easy for him to put the penalty on it. In that case, all the same.
Well, let's unpack this penalty, because Finau did a similar thing the day before on 16th, where it seemed to move because he's pressed down on the grass behind it. So the ball's actually physically move down with the grass, but then as soon as he's released his club back up, it's gone back to the same position. Hasn't rotated, logo hasn't moved, anything else like that. Twitter was blowing up about it. Nothing was said about it. He didn't get a penalty, which I thought was fair enough. I thought he hadn't done anything to improve his life. The ball hadn't shifted position. But then with Johns, and I'm probably saying this looking in hindsight, that he was up by so many strokes that I didn't think like there was a, you know, you can penalize him two shots and it doesn't matter. He's still going to win the tournament. And it's not, you know, the PGA are keeping everybody else happy, all the traditionalists that are probably firing up at home and couldn't believe it. So, Ames, what's your take on this? Did you think it was worth the two-shot penalty? And obviously it would have cost him a tournament if he'd, you know, won by a shot.
I've got to say, like, I think it's really, really grey. And, like, I went on Twitter and I searched for it and I watched a slow-mo zoomed in version of it, and I like, if I was the rules official, like if I'm the Slugger White watching it, I would still not be like, bang, that's a penalty, because the grass was so thick and thick. Like spongy, like the grass was going up and down, and I still don't know that the ball really moved from its position. Like, and that is the rule. Like, it can oscillate, it can kind of wobble, but I don't know if that really moved from its original position. And that's exactly why they stop people calling up, from their couch at home, calling up, being like, give that person a penalty, because it's not so black and white of like, the ball wasn't stationary the whole time.
Yeah.
But,
and it's supposed to be,
I don't know, I thought it was
naked eye. It's supposed to be by the naked eye rather than being slow-mo coverages and everything like that. It's supposed to be by the naked eye, did the ball change position?
And, I mean, if you're not leading the tournament, that's never going to get noticed.
No, 100%.
And that's why they stop people calling up, because are you going to go and have a look at every shot ever played by a player out there? But like, I mean, because I've actually called a penalty on myself last year in Bonneville. Like, I was actually took the club back and my ball moved and it was kind of too late and I hit it and no one saw, and I called a penalty on myself. But if that's me being John Rahm in that situation, like the strange interview that happened after, he was like, what are you talking about?
Oh,
like, I don't think that that was I don't really think it was a penalty, to be honest. I didn't see the ball properly move, and I think it was really, really grey, at least.
Like, yeah, I think the PGA are very, very lucky that it wasn't a tournament on the line. Like I said, I think it was very easy for them to give him a two-shot penalty because of the situation of what was going on and that he won by so many. You know, he still wins by three in the end with a two-shot penalty. And I agree with you totally. The interview afterwards from Amanda Baglione, I just thought, what a low blow. This guy's come off the best one of, you know, the best win that he's had in his career. He's just got number one in the world. And the first question you got to ask him about is the possible penalty. And you saw the shock in his face. Like he's nearly in tears hugging his missus. He's, you know, had a great, you know, chat with Jack on the green. And then he's got to come up and face that question. And I just thought, you know, after everything that he'd done, to ask him that, I just thought it took a bit of the shine off it. And it was, you felt sorry for the bloke seeing his face and how bad he felt. And he's like, if there's a penalty, like, I'll take it. I didn't realize it had moved. I just thought, what was he going to say in that moment? Oh, yeah, I know it moved it. You know, whatever.
He handled it so well, though. He absolutely handled that so well. And
you could see he was in shock.
To him. Oh, yeah. It just, his face was just like, what? Huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if that's what happened, that's what happened. And he just rolled with the punches. He handled that absolutely brilliantly. And he came out number one in that interview. And yeah, he's now number one in the world as well. Yeah, well, so
I was watching on Golf TV, and they did the interview on Golf TV afterwards. And then they cut back to the, you know, the presenter. And even he said, well, that was a fuzzy interview is what he called it. And you could tell that he was kind of shocked by the interview as well.
I dare say the producer was in Amanda's ear saying, ask the question, ask the question.
100%. And 100%.
She probably didn't want to at all. And just, producer in her ear just saying, ask it. Mm. You need to ask it. It'll be great TV. You know, I don't know if I could handle being in that position. She does a fantastic job, but that was, that was so strange for her to ask that question in that position. And I think as we were chatting on the in our group chat earlier today, Nate, we commented about it would have been handled totally different if it was a one-shot lead that he's come in on and that was going to be the tournament. They would have been ushered away into the scorer's hut. And
who knows what could have happened there, because there would have been people angry either way. And it would have been a very interesting situation. And, you know, I'm glad. I think the PGA are very glad that he won by so many in the end.
I think that's the downside about golf in general. Like, it's not so clear cut. Like, there's not so many other sports where, like, you've got the bunker in the NRL that some people think so ridiculous that's going to now. But, like, this is a kind of another level that it's just there's not many situations that's getting picked up on, and it's only getting picked up on generally when there's a tournament on the line. But, you know, thankfully in that situation it didn't matter, and, you know, he's not going to care now, obviously. But, yeah, he would have if it was a bit tighter coming in, that's for sure.
He took so much from that shot dropping as well. He was absolutely pumped. And... Mm. Yeah, Palmer gives him a high five. That would have done so much if it was on 12 and he knocks one in from the side of the green and he ends up making birdie, Palmer ends up making par. That would have turned it around so differently. But being that late in the stage, I think it was just a sewn up decision at that stage and gone, that's it, I've shut the door now. I've got too much of a lead. You know, I've got five shots on you with, you know, what was it, two to play. So, you know, that's it.
It was a shot of his career. A shot of his career and something that would have been and probably still hopefully will be replayed over and over again, but it probably won't be now because it'll be remembered as that it was a penalty. And some people will think that he improved his lie and then hit it into the hole so it took away from the actual shot, but just incredible shot. And that's the way he's going to be remembered for that one. But hopefully the focus is on, you know, him now being number one and Rory being kicked off. And another shout out, I feel like we do this every week, to Joshy Lawrence, but we probably need to check on Joshy and make sure he's okay at the moment, because his man's not number one in the world anymore.
Yes.
And he's the second Spaniard to do so after Seve. So, you know, they mentioned Seve, and he talks about Seve as well. He's the third youngest to be number one, and just massive achievement. You know, I think we forget how young John Rahm is, and he feels like he's been around a long time. But it's great to see him number one and the second Spaniard after Seve.
He's now top 10 in the FedEx Cup standings. He's number 8. In the FedEx Cup standings as well. So that's a good one. Sorry, Ames, to cut you off there.
No, I was just going to say, like, now that he's world number one, like, I just hope that people aren't going to jump on that, like, when's he going to win a major thing? Like, that's probably going to be next. And, like, he's only 24. Like, the average on the PGA Tour for winning a major is probably, like, 32 or something, I think. When Scotty won, I think that's kind of what the average age was. So hopefully now people don't get board and start jumping on that one.
It'll come. If he stays
he's
at
not
number
the
one
best until he does that. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
That's what we're waiting for.
Yeah. So. And it's like all of them. They even mention about DJ only winning one. And like it feels like it's never good enough for everybody else. So exactly. We've probably been spoilt with the numbers that, you know, that Brooks has put up lately, and then, you know, what Spieth did early on and what Tiger's obviously done, that we expect these guys to just win major after major. And it's like, well, only one person can win each major. There's only four a year, and this year we've only got three. So anyways.
Yeah, that's an age-old argument, the whole major piece. And, you know, you shouldn't be able to be number one if you haven't won a major. You get the same in tennis, similar situation there. So that's an age-old argument, and I'm comfortable with the point system that surrounds the world golf rankings. So I'm happy for him to be world number one. And, you know, we had that conversation a couple of weeks ago and we brought it up again last week, and Bryson DeChambeau, and about him being world number one. Absolutely not after last week carding a 10 on a par 5, double par. But, yeah, we've now got a new world number one, John Rahm.
He beat DJ. If you want to talk about Bryson beat DJ. DJ... who knows what he finished? He's still out there on the course finishing his second round. And if you really want to know as well, Bryson's 10 actually helped Tiger make the cut. Okay, so Bryson was all of us Tiger lovers. So, you know, he was just helping my other guy, Tiger, out and letting Tiger make the cut. So
Tiger was his producer in the year saying, hit another one out of bounds. Hit another one.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. takeaways from the tourney?
Jack and Barbara, 60th wedding anniversary in a few days. Both turned 80 Nicholas's. This year.
The Nicholases, the COVID yes. Nicholases we're talking about.
Yes, both turned 80 earlier this year. And that was probably more so my point here around the takeouts. They tested positive for COVID-19 back in March. Just think what could have been. How was the world going to respond if something was to happen to Jack? Like, I don't know if I could understand what that would be like.
Well, you'd know Tiger was the best golfer alive.
Yeah. it's a morbid point. It's a morbid point to make, but I can understand where that comes from. But I'm just so happy that they were really fortunate in terms of the symptoms that they had, or lack thereof, were pretty low key. So I love having Jack around. His input in the commentary booth was really cool this weekend. He actually got a lot more in depth than what he would normally, and had more engaging conversation than what he would normally. And the fellow commentators were engaging him more than they normally would as well. So yeah, that was really cool.
When did this story break about them announcing that they had COVID?
Only today.
It's only today. So they've held this story. Yep. They haven't told anyone. It hasn't somehow leaked. And then they wait till after the tournament where they've been around everybody.
It was during the play on Sunday.
After he said that he's going to shake whoever's hand and he doesn't care, he's going to shake their hand on the green. And then he comes out and goes, oh, by the way, I had COVID a couple of months ago. I just thought that was such a weird, weird thing. And then John Rahm doesn't even shake his hand at the end. He does the awkward, it was like the fist bump. Do we shake? What do we do? And then they just like fist bump and hold fists there for a couple of seconds. It was pretty cute. But poor old Jack. But it's good to see Jack and Barb still kicking.
Yeah. And your takeaway?
Jack just won the Open on the weekend. Did you see that? So they did the British Open where they put all the greatest golfers against each other. Jack beat Tiger by one stroke in the end. So congrats, Jack.
He's the greatest golfer alive.
Well, yes, he's alive. That's right. Hey, put it this way, and this is probably going down an awkward road here, but if he did pass away in March, he would have at least gone knowing that his record never got broken by Tiger. So, and then Tiger could break it afterwards, and everyone would be okay with that.
He was taking this down a corner. I didn't think he
was going down. That's fine. I'll go down there. Got to entertain the people somehow. Double par would love that one. Anyway,
don't worry, Jack. I love you, mate. Don't worry about Nate. I love you.
But anyways, back to the takeaways. My takeaway from the tournament was just how much I love tough courses set up like majors. Last week compared to this week, and how they can just set up a course completely different. The same course, obviously a few things different, and you've got a crazy, crazy tournament. I love seeing low scores. I mean, he still shot 11 under, well, 9 under with the penalty, but you don't have too many that were under par. You know, I think when you get down to about 10th spot, 10th spot was even with the card. So I love seeing tournaments like that, and it was as close to a major as we've probably seen for a long time. So that was my takeaway.
Yeah, loved it.
Course setup is everything, basically. Could see from one week to another, but greens, rough, tee positions, length, everything.
You want to see players hitting shots from where we hit shots from normally. You want to see them with those shit lies. You want to see them hitting it out of the creek or this downhill. Like Palmer had one today where he just missed the creek, had the uphill. You couldn't see the ball at all. And that's what, like, we love seeing that. You don't want to see him stripe it down the middle every time, hit green, one putt birdie. You want to see it tough. And it was great how they set up their course. And the fact that they announced on the Saturday night that they were going to give them one last water, and then they didn't care what happened to the greens after that. They were just going to bake right out. And that showed on Sunday. They were firm as so were the fairways. So completely different setup. I love it.
Love to hear that as a member on the Sunday.
I know, wouldn't you? Yeah, yeah. Their course has been destroyed, Jack. But anyways.
I want to get some of that turf.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. We have some other golf to talk about as well. We've got Korn Ferry, Euro Tour, LPGA, Aussie.
Yeah, I just thought we'd give a bit of an Aussie abroad update. We want to keep track of our Aussies, and there was a couple of notable things that happened around the grounds. And Memorial, obviously, we had Jay Day that made the cut, and a T4, probably the best Aussie result we've had in a while. Leash with a T40, Cam Smith with a T68. Between those four players, only one round in the 60s by all three of those players that made the cut, which is, you know, unheard of that you think of those three guys that have made the cut to only have one round in the 60s. Korn Ferry, we had Ryan Ruffles, had a T18. So he had a 69, 68 weekend, his best result since Feb. So that gets him inside the top 50 on the Korn Ferry money list there, so which is great. Harrison Endicott also had a T40. There were seven other Aussies that actually missed the cut in the Korn Ferry. So there's plenty of Aussies that are playing in that Korn Ferry to keep an eye out. Even Stephen Bowditch is playing, Bode, and Robert Allenby. So a couple of noticeables. Another one from the European Tour. So this has kind of developed today. It's been up on our Facebook page as well, today being the Monday that we're recording. But Dean Lawson. So Dan's Diggers, an Aussie that plays in the European Tour. He's the only Aussie that's been over there the last 2 weeks. He was equal round one leader, had an opening score of 63 over there in Austria. And he faded a little over the weekend, ended up finishing T18 and had a triple bogey on the second last hole, which meant he fell out of the top 10. Now, that hurts even more when you find out the story with Digger. So he got news on the night after the second round that his flight was going to be cancelled on him to come back to Australia because Australia had introduced some new rules saying that you can only have 50 people on a flight returning back. So what that meant is he was going to have to reschedule a new flight in 3 weeks, but then probably miss that flight depending on what's going on and miss out. So he was forced. The only other option was to upgrade his seat to business class or first class. They were the only passengers that were guaranteed to get on the plane and come back to Australia. So he put a post up on social media, explained it all, asking for some people to kind of help him out and try and get home. He said he was over there just representing Australia, trying to do what he could. And now he's kind of been, you know, screwed and he's got to find this money. I've been in touch with him today and spoken to him about the situation, actually. And he's had to bite the bullet. He's had to pay $9,000 for the one flight back home. So he's had to upgrade his flight. So pretty much the money he made over in Europe's kind of gone on that. But obviously he's got other ongoing costs as well. So they've had to take it out of their mortgage. He's going to return today. So he's going to be on the flight today back to Oz. He's going to be in quarantine for a couple of weeks. So yeah, interesting developing story there, but he's pretty keen to jump on and have a chat to us during quarantine. He says he's going to have plenty of time when he's back here because he's not going to be able to do anything. So yeah, keep tuned for that one, but hopefully we'll be able to chat to him and unravel a bit of the situation and have a chat to him about his career as well. But pretty crazy. I mean, Amy, is that something that you're obviously worried about, you know, looking to get back over and travel?
It's just really hard to plan anything at the moment. Like I've applied and been authorized to leave. I think I'm quite lucky that I'm a British citizen. So, I mean, I can stay over there as long as I want, which I'm kind of thinking maybe, you know, I might end up staying over there for quite a while. I don't know what the situation is going to be like here. At the moment, you have to pay for 2 weeks quarantine when you come back, which is, you know, just pretty much not in my, it's just not going to happen really. So yeah, I mean, my plan's to kind of just go over there and kind of almost wait it out, just play and see kind of what eventuates, but it just changes all so quickly, like week by week, almost day by day that it's, I mean, like that's exactly what happens. My dad was working down in Sydney for 3 days. He stayed in Campbelltown working, and then all of a sudden that's a hot spot. He's now in a hotel up here quarantining. It's like no even warning, nothing. It's like so it is pretty much impossible to plan for things, but I think hopefully I might be a little bit more fortunate than some people in that I'm a British citizen at least, so I'm hoping that all kind of things will fall my way a little bit with that on my side. But yeah, it's it's tough going, for everyone in the world, but you know, it's just, it is what it is, unfortunately, I think.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And there was another cool story out of the Euro Tour the week before in the Austrian Open. Mark Warren, Scottish golfer, he won the tournament with no caddy. So he carried the bag himself. There's vision of him, you know, just bag on the back, walking around. But his caddy failed a COVID test. He had no backup option. So he decided, well, you know, I'll just do it myself. Ends up winning the tournament. And I guess it you know, brings up an interesting debate because they've spoken about it with the PGA and the bubble and how many people are in that bubble. Are caddies necessary? Could we have a tournament, even just, I'd love to see one PGA tournament where the pros are pushing, pulling, carrying whatever their bags and, you know, let them use their rangefinder, let them play without a caddy and see what happens. I think there was the perfect opportunity maybe for something like that last week for the workday, just to do something a little bit different. But I'd love to see it, but good on Mark for winning without a caddy. They're not that important, are they, Amy?
That's actually so interesting you say that, because you'll see that like week in, week out on the LET.
Right.
Like, there's, you know, a few girls that will have a regular caddy, you know, maybe like established players or people who are really well supported sponsor-wise or by their federations back home. But for the rest of us, like, I have a caddy when it's compulsory. Otherwise, I'm like pulling my own trolley because it's just too expensive. And yeah, sponsorship is like, you know, not easy to come by. So you see that a lot with us, but I'd like to imagine the guys in the PGA tour doing that, you know, it would be so foreign to them. But yeah, we don't even have the rangefinder. We have our yardage books and we're pacing it out ourselves. And then, you know, going out there, cleaning your own ball on the green, going back over, and just little things that, you know, it's a luxury having a caddy, but it's, you know, they don't, you need to trust yourself as well, as was proved this week.
You're carrying?
Hitting the shots.
Are you carrying?
No,
or are
I
you
don't
pushing?
Carry.
Yeah.
No, I'll probably just get a trolley, pool trolley. I wouldn't carry. I end up like a hunchback, but yeah.
It's not the standard trolleys that they just have for the social golfers there.
It's legit.
And that's what they had. I saw it in the it was the Queensland Open or something that was on early this year, and it was great just seeing them have to carry. And I remember went to a playoff. God, I'm trying to think what it was. It was like a three hole. It was Arnold, Scott Arnold. Was in it, and they kept going back and pulling their buggies back, and then they were like jumped on the back of the cart ride and like holding onto their buggy so it wouldn't like tip over, like all us amateurs have done. We've all been in that spot, and I thought, how good's that? But I'm glad you don't walk with your bag. I despise people that walk with their bags. I just don't know how they do it. Golf's hard enough. If you've got to carry your own bags around, nah, there's no way I'd play golf if I had to carry my bag.
Yeah, you get ripped on it in some places. Like, I think in America, if you're like pulling a trolley, it's like, oh my God.
It's a weird thing.
Like, what are
yes.
you doing? I'm like,
yes.
Why would you not? Why would you not? Yeah.
So are you pulling the flag yourself as well, obviously, unless there's, you know, another caddy that's in that group?
But yeah.
You're grabbing the flag
caddy,
yourself. And
yeah, if there's a caddy in the group, then they're not the communal caddy, you know, but they all generally pull the pin.
Yep.
Maybe clean your ball. But yeah, if there's no caddy in the group, then you know, it's just like we've all got to do everything ourselves, rake the bunker and grab the pin and all that. So yeah, I love the weeks when we get to have a caddy. Well, even though you know, it's an added expense, but when you have to do it, you have to do it, and I enjoy it when it does happen.
Yeah, not that peasant golf like the rest of us play each weekend.
Yeah, that's rough. That's rough going.
Yeah.
Tough game. Absolutely tough game. When it's 20 degrees out, blue and sunny, and we're complaining about not having a caddy. No.
Can someone tell me where it is 20 degrees at the moment? Because it ain't 20 degrees in the Western Riverina, I'll tell you that much. Yeah, I know.
Yesterday. I think it was quite nice. I think
if you can just live stream your golf day, at least I can just kind of feel what it should be like. if you can just get a live video going that day for us, that'd be good.
I'll stream it straight to you.
Thanks.
Moving into GDA group highlights, we had some tipping comps again this week, as we do every week. So we had our normal tipping and our GDA tour tipping. So first place this week went to Joshua King, and he bags $105 for himself. Second was Sue Tate. You're always in the leaderboard, Sue. I don't know what you're doing, and I'm going to have to call an inquiry into your tips 100%. Constantly. All good, Sue. But you've bagged the consolation prize of $70. You had an 8-shot lead going into Sunday. Matt's absolutely put the mocker on it, as he does every other week, and calls it every other week. It's funny to watch actually unfold, but not as funny as taking $70 instead of $105, but nonetheless, you got $70 as a consolation prize there. And third, Kyle Thacker, old mate, local one from around where I am. G'day, Kyle, and I know you hit me up for a round the other day. We'll get out again soon and have another hit, mate. I'm looking forward to it. Kyle's played pennants for our club as well, so he's a handy golfer, very handy golfer. In the GDA tour, we had two people picking Rahm, and it jackpotted last week. So we had James O'Rourke and Tim Gleeson that picked Rahm, and you guys split $154. James O'Rourke, you get the box of pills, the TP5s. So look forward to them coming out and landing in your mailbox. So, yeah, a bit of an update on the tipping comps. Is there anything else, group highlights from yourself, Nate, post of the week?
No, I threw up an interesting post yesterday that I knew was going to get a bit of attention, and 350 comments later. I was sent an anonymous screenshot from somebody at a certain club, just have a look at this. And it was a golfer. I don't know the story behind or anything else. My story and the way I was coming at it from was just, you know, how would you feel if you had 44 points and you felt like, you know, how good you hit it that day? You're hoping that you're in there for a win. 44 points is usually going to be pretty competitive. A lot of people have won with much less easily than that. Yeah. And then you get beat by 10 shots because a guy rolls in with a 54 Stableford score. But look, I know what happened. The guy was off 41. Obviously, the changes at the moment that, you know, the handicaps have gone out a bit more, but it's up to the club whether they want to restrict the handicaps for the competition that day. Obviously, this club doesn't. That's on them. That's fine. And then, you know, the week before that, a guy of 54, he won with a 44. So, look, I just threw it up there just to see. I knew it was going to cause a bit of controversy. I didn't know it was going to be 350 comments later. But it was pretty funny because one of the guys on there, Joseph, he was the one off 54, and he said he doesn't know how he's off 54. He put in his three scores, and I think he's been docked 20 shots or something since then in two rounds. And Samuel Binks actually got on there today. So it was all about Samuel who lost by 10, and he must have got word that he was on there, and he commented on there today saying, "This is gold. I was spewing when I saw that result come in." So yeah, pretty cool. Look, you know, it's up to obviously each club how they do it and how they run it. And, you know, it's good to see those guys. They might have just obviously started playing, and that's the handicap system, but you know, sometimes it works in your favor, and other times you get beat by 10 points after shooting 44.
54, but like how?
I've got to admit, now? I've had a 50 points before, and I was, wow. I think I was off 20 and I shot 5 over or something like that. It was something ridiculous. It was at, where was it at? Leonay Golf Course in Western Sydney at the base of the Blue Mountains. I took my prize money, I picked a club straight away, and I ran out of there, and I've never been back there because I'm scared to go back to that club. So, look it does, I'm sure it does happen, but I think that's not their fault. It's more the handicapping system's probably fault in that one, and there's obviously going to be a few, you know, ones that get away from it. But, yeah, there was a bit of controversy. It was a good bit of fun.
A bit, 350 comments, and they were coming thick and fast too. It was
nearly as many comments and engagements, but not quite as our DINT competition that we're running at the moment. So a good reminder for people to go out there if they want to win themselves a free putter, mate, jump onto our Facebook group and have a look at the announcement there. You just got to like, share, and tag one of your mates that can't putt. And I think we've had like 15,000 engagements through that post, but there's only, 100 odd people that have shared it. So those people have got so far like a 1 in 100 chance. So if you're sitting there, go and share it, tag your mate and like the post, and you're in the running for a great prize.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Phoenix putter is something I gamed over the weekend. So maybe moving on as a segue into our
beautiful guy. We work good together. Segue.
It was, well done, Nate. Yeah.
Lay up. Alley-oop
there. Yeah. To that one. Very, very good. Never lay up, mate. Never lay up. Sorry. Got to get that out there. But game for this week. I actually had a better game this week. I had two weeks where I had 27 in a row. I had a better game this week. I gamed the Phoenix putter, so I caught up with Anthony during the week, and he brought me one of the one of his Phoenix putters, and it took a couple of holes to get used to, but it absolutely feels like it's on rails. It was actually really awesome. I loved playing with it, and I really got into the rhythm after a few holes, and it worked quite well. So I ended up with 33 points, but I came home really well with 19. So I was pretty happy with that. Matt was another story. We actually ventured up to Wyong Golf Course and played comp up there with a couple of other mates from my golf crew. And yeah, Matt was another story though. He managed to hit the longest par three. This is just one highlight I'll talk to. He managed to hit the longest par three on the course, which was some 180, 185, I think it was, from the tees that day, uphill as well. And he hits a green and proceeded to four putt for double. When we rocked up to the golf course, that green is just below the practice putting green. And I took the Phoenix putter onto the practice green and had a bit of a roll with it. And Matt came down and had a bit of a go as well. And I pointed out that hole and I said, don't go long on that hole. That's the only hole that you just do not want to go long on. And sure enough, he hits it up the back of the green, and it's a severe downhill slope, and the pin was right at the front, probably, I don't know, three paces on the green. And yeah, he babied the first one and then drove the next one past it and four-putted. So yeah, I got to get into you for that one, Matt. I warned you and you just didn't listen.
Bales, this guy's getting ruthless at the moment because you're not showing your face. So if you feel free to do whatever you need to do, send me the stories, film him off the tee, whatever you need to do, send it through to us and we'll get you back. I've got your back, Bales.
Yeah,
we miss you.
Yeah, there's no right or reply, mate. We've got to get you back on. What about your game, Nate?
Yeah, we had a four ball championships was this weekend. So it was a Saturday, Sunday. I can hardly play two rounds in weekend. So just played on the Saturday, played with Mr. Hole in One, my mate Ben Baggist.
Dr. Baggist.
Yeah, so we played with Dr. Baggist. We had a great day. We rocks and diamonds was definitely the day, but we had fun and the closest I've ever come to a hole in one as well. So I was kind of glad it didn't slam dunk. It pitched about 6 inches from the hole, looked like it was tracking the whole way. There was covered by the bunker, so the pin was behind the bunker and you couldn't see it. So we all got very excited. Ben started running around the outside to kind of see if he could see the ball, and he kept going, I can't see it. I can't see it. I can't see it. And then he kept going. I thought if he goes another couple of meters, this thing's in the hole. And then he goes, oh, I can see it. Like, damn it. I got so excited. But then as we walked up there, at the moment, because of COVID, we've not only got the things in the foam noodle in the ground, in the hole, but we've also got like a plastic lining that's now making it really shallow as well. So after, you know, hammering my mate Scotty the whole time for his hole in one that wasn't a hole in one because it landed in the noodle and shot out the back, there is no way if my ball slam dunked, that thing would have gone 50 feet out the back. So I was kind of glad it didn't, but I made the birdie, and it was a fun day. I had a great day out there. Amy, you played today. You've been playing a bit.
Yeah, mixed it up a little bit. Went up to Indooroopilly the last couple of days and really enjoyed it. The course is awesome. They've got a relatively new head greenkeeper, I think, in from Royal Canberra, which obviously is a fantastic course, and yeah, it's in great shape up there. I think it pretty much always is, but made a few changes and it's looking awesome. And had a bit of a friendly match play situation and tiled them up, so pleased with that today. So awesome. But it is interesting courses up there, they've got the four nines, and playing against someone with a handicap was interesting. Whichever sort of combination of nines you played, the way it worked out with the indexes, like one day,
yes,
played a nine hole match, and the guy plays off, I think maybe six, seven, depending on, like, you know, it changes whatever with the on the day. But
yeah,
so this one day he got five shots for nine holes, and I was like, he's being a bandit, like, surely this isn't real. And then we played today 18 holes, and he gets, I think, five shots for the whole 18. But it's just the way it worked out with
the hardest combination,
the combinations. But yeah, enjoyed it a lot more today when he wasn't getting as many shots, and tiled him up, so pleased with that. And yeah, played pretty nicely, made a few more birdies, so that was really good.
Perfect. I like how you say playing with people with a handicap, like, la-di-da, like, you know, how
that's 99.9%,
you know? I know.
Mine wasn't changing, I was just giving more shots, like, and it was just, I don't know, I wasn't enjoying it. I was going to put it up as a post on the page to get some sympathy, but then I thought, oh, that's just not going to go down well for me. So not.
What was your handicap before you turned pro?
I think it was +3, I think, before I turned pro.
So at least you were off scratch then on the weekend, were you?
Well, yeah, so technically I'm actually getting shots.
You're
like
getting shots.
Any shot, exactly.
You're getting shots. Come on.
Yeah.
What, I shouldn't say that. He was trying to get it out of me. What's your handicap? I was like, I don't have one. So that's dropped me in it a bit, actually.
Oh, gotcha.
We'll have to get in touch with him, let him know.
If you're listening, mate, jump on the Golf Days Australia advice. No, I'm just joking.
he'll let you know, that's for sure.
So we're looking at double par. He sent us through another rant this week. I haven't listened to this one, so there's been no editing. It's going straight in, and I'll bring it
I've got
now.
Some news about double par after this as well, so stay tuned. We'll hear his rant, and I'll fill you in about double par and what he's up to at the moment.
G'day, choppers, double par here. How good was that announcement last week? Dint Putters coming on board as the sponsor. Well done, boys. I was just kicking something around, though. How does this sound? Double par, brought to you by Dint Putters. Work on it, but I think it's got something there, eh? What do you think? Anyway, not as much of a rant this week as normal, but a little bit of an official welcome to the Double Par Club to Nate's mate. Bryson, my hat's too tight, but it matches me shirt, DeChambeau. What a legend. He had a 10 on the 15th at Muirfield. And did anyone see the scene he put on with the rules official? Oh, my God. I've never seen anyone carry on so much. The ball's in. It's under the fence. There's a part of it in. Oh, last week, my God, just shut up, clown. The ball is out, except the ruling. But it got me thinking, you know when you're playing that comp round with someone you don't really know and they're trying to flirt the rules and they're trying to take a drop 3 kilometres up the fairway? Mate, the ball went straight left. It's a reload. What should you do in that circumstance? My advice is call them out on it. It's one thing golf has going for it is integrity, and we don't want to lose ours. So don't accept when someone's trying to cheat. Be polite about it, but hold your ground. We need to maintain the integrity of golf. I'm double par. Bryson had one. Double par because it sounds better than a 10.
Oh, brilliant.
That's a great one. I like that this week. And yeah, he did have a double par, and obviously, you know, I wanted to let you guys know, double par has gone onto social media. He has launched his Instagram page on social media. So if you want to get around him, his username on there is _ double par, and all he does is post scorecards of players that have double pars. So there's a photo of him, that's his first one. And then he's got Bryson, obviously, as his first guy. He's got the 10 circled. He had a 10 on a par 5. And then he goes, well done, Zach Blair, on your double par, which was an 8 on a par 4. And then we are here is a very rare double par, double bogey. Congrats, Paul Casey, for his 8 on a par 3. And then Lanto Griffin and Scott Piercy for their double par. So one of the all-time Instagram accounts. I can see it. It's got 4 followers at the moment. I can see it blowing up. So get around his Instagram page, find out, we want to find out who he is, but he's good value. But yeah, on the fact of cheating, how do you deal with that, Amy? If you know that, and you've probably come across this, how do you deal with people that have done the wrong thing on the golf course?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Like, I would always call in a rules official in our situation, but it definitely happens. Like, people wanting to take a drop where you all know that's not gone in there. So it is tough. I think kind of it's hard to know when to step in. Like, for us, we would just say to, I'm not marking your card. I'm not involved. I am marking your card and that's wrong. Call in a rules official. But yeah, there have been a few blow-ups out on tour, not many, but I know there have been a couple, and it's tough, when you're playing with your mates, but it's tough when you're playing for your livelihood and you can see someone, blatantly doing the wrong thing. You have to call them out because it's, otherwise it's affecting the whole field.
I watched Matt on the weekend. One into the water off the tee box and wanders down to the ladies' tee. And I'm like, hold on, it's the same body of water back there, mate. where's the entry into that body of water? No, it was pretty funny to watch nonetheless. And I think he teed off just in front of the red markers. So we did take any photos. We let him go there.
it is a tough one to deal with. I mean, we've got a few, not naming names, I'm not going to put anyone out there, but there's some older guys sometimes with some creative counting, and sometimes they literally can't remember what they got, and they'll just say, I got a six, and it's like, well, I counted you and it's an eight, and it gets a bit awkward. They're not going to win. They're not putting a score together, but you're just kind of like, what do you do in that situation? And do you ruin the round that's been? So you kind of, I think you pick and choose kind of when it happens sometimes and how comfortable you feel with that person. But I think if there's a tourney on the line, if it's championships or something like that, I'll never
54 points.
Yeah. Well, I'll never live down. I'll probably call myself out here, but on the fourth round of our champs, B grade champs a few years ago, flustered as I was leading by 11 shots going into the last round. So massive lead. I throw a few back to them on the first two holes. Then on the third, I've hit one out of bounds off the tee. Then duffed my next one. Couldn't find the ball. Then had to go back to where I hit it before. Anyways, long story short, I was flustered. A grade are up my ass, and they're the four leaders for the A grade because we're in a seeded draw. I think I take one drop. And it rolls forward or whatever, and I just quickly get it and place it to where it was, not thinking or anything like that. Like, just, I should have dropped again if it rolled forward, whatever. Quickly placed it. I haven't lived that down in how many years. Everyone loves to talk about drop not place, or place not drop, or whatever else. I end up winning the day by 14 shots. It was like Rahm's thing. But what I would give to go back and have that done the right time and have someone call me out, because I had the playing partners there that watched it and didn't call me out. I would have loved that, because it's not a good feeling even getting kind of accused as a cheat, or getting, getting that tagline. Every club's got them. Every club knows the people that they think are cheaters, or people that are creative counters, or always find their ball out in the middle of nowhere. So you'd never want to be that person at your club. It's all about that honesty and integrity, and that's what the game's about. And I don't understand how people, look after their handicap to win tournaments as well. I don't get it. To me, you want to get as low as possible. That's the aim of it. If you win a few things along the way, that's great.
Absolutely.
But good work, Double Par. Get on your Insta. Everyone's going to be on. It's going to blow up.
What a week to start that page.
Yeah, I know, right?
What a week.
He started the Double Par, and all of a sudden he's got left, right, and center. He's got five guys on there. I'm just, it might go quiet for a few weeks now.
Very good. More golf coming up this weekend. We've got the 3M Open.
Yeah, 3M Open. So in Minnesota, it's actually in its original date and venue that was planned. So no spectators again. We've got DJ, Brooks, Koepka. We've got Chase Koepka as well. Last year's winner, Matt Wolf's in the field. We've also got the return of Tommy Fleetwood. So looking forward to seeing Tommy back in action. Overall, but I think it's a pretty weak field. I think people were kind of hoping that people weren't going to play the WGC at Memphis in the following week and maybe go to the 3M and not risk getting outside of that PGA bubble because the majors, straight afterwards. But it's turned out that a lot of people are deciding to do that and play the WGC. So it's not a massive field, but there's still enough names that it's going to be a fun tournament to watch. TPC Twin Cities, just over 7,000 yards, Arnold Palmer course. Plenty of water there. It's got 27 water hazards. I think there's only water not in play on four of them. So if you can avoid the water there, you're going to score pretty well. And if everyone remembers last year, Matt Wolf won there, his third ever tour start, and he beat Morikawa and Bryson when Bryson thought that he was at least going to a playoff. It should be a good one to watch. Looking forward to it. Especially leading into the major, these guys are trying to now get on that push. They're trying to peak for the major that's coming up in, less than a month's time. So we've got, DJ and Brooks and who've had pretty poor results last week. So it'd be interesting to see how they bounce back and how they start to come.
Yeah, well, I think I called out tipping JT for this week gone past, thinking he's got a great opportunity to just try and bounce back and from the playoff loss to Morikawa the previous week at the workday in the same venue, but it was a completely different course as we talked about earlier. And yeah, he couldn't get it done to back up. So yeah, it is going to be interesting to see them back up. They're going to obviously a different place, different course. So it should be fun to watch. Tips, Nate, who are you thinking?
I think you got to be a pretty good ball striker around here with the water in place. So I'm going Paul Casey. So I've got Casey at $21 he is at the moment. But I've also got Doc Redman in there. So he's had a few top 25 finishes. So he's at 51 and he's my roughie at the moment. But also we've got a couple Aussies in there. Cam Davis, Ren Gibson, Bads, I think Charms is playing. So a few players, but Paul Casey, Doc Redman are my tips.
I'm going to go with Bubba. This week, he was in decent form in the week just gone, but I'll go Bubba. I'll throw Matt Wolf back in there, and for a smoky, I might actually go Erik van Rooyen as well. So, yeah, bit of a smoky in that one.
I could watch Bubba and Bryce. Yep. I think they are just entertaining players, and I think when they get paired up together, that would be a great group to watch as well. I think just Bubba, just natural ability, just feet placement, getting after it. He's entertaining, shoulder flick all the time, just always on edge, it feels like. So I love watching Bubba play, although he rocks a visor, so I'm not a big fan of that one, but that's another story.
We've got to get a snake charmer. Sorry, we've got to get a snake charmer tracker going, seeing how he's going with the tour card possibility as well. So I might drop him a line and see what's happening for him, where he's at, and see if we can get an update for everyone. Sorry, Amy, your tips.
I might go Matt Wolf, I think. He's obviously got good vibes from this tournament. So, I'm just going to go with him, I think. I'm going to go straight down the line, just pick one and go with it.
I like it. He played well this week as well. He had T22 and he was around and about. So I don't mind that pick. I think he obviously have good feelings up there and being defending champ. I just think, like we were talking to Hannah Green the other day about it, must just suck being a defending champ and going back there and having no crowd, none of that build. You're a part of that defending champion, whether they have a dinner or whether they have obviously the events leading up to it and the pro-ams and whatnot. And I think that just kind of sucks to go and not have that, that fun, defending champion title to run with it. No fans. So, but yeah, I reckon he's a good pick this week. Good work, Aim.
Nice.
Like say that before he's played, as if that's the one.
Yeah, that's the one. No, it's good. We'll see how we go next week.
All right. On that note, we might wrap it up for another episode of the Golf Days Australia podcast. Nate, it's great to have you back again. Amy as well.
Thank you,
Thanks
mate.
Very much. Good to be here again.
Yep. Yeah, and just going back on the lines of Puma and their branding, mate, go out there and enjoy golf. Get out there, get amongst it, get involved in the page. Tell your friends about the podcast. Enjoy this game that we've got access to.
All right. So thanks to Dint Putters. Thanks to Cobra Puma Golf. And take it easy, guys. And we'll see you next time on the Golf Days Australia podcast.
We're three golf tragics. We're weekend hackers and we love to go to golf. And I
showed you guys that on the weekend.
Yes, you did. We'll get to that shortly.